It may be a little hard to believe, but the Catholic Church has a patron saint of humor, Philip Neri, who noted that a cheerful and glad spirit attains perfection much more readily than a melancholy spirit. Close quote. And my observation is that we can become cheerful and glad people as we laugh. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College. Last week, the After Dinner Scholar featured Wyoming Catholic College senior, Miss Amanda Johnson, talking about her theologically rich oration about horsemanship as an aid to restoring our fallen humanity. This week, I'm pleased to have another senior, Kevin Milligan, as my guest. Kevin's philosophically rich oration was entitled, Laughing at Perfection, a Classification of Laughter and a Defense of its Role in the Natural Perfection of Man. Is solemnity the mark of the saint and the philosopher, or is laughter an essential part of holiness and wisdom? I began by asking Kevin how he chose his topic.
Well, the simple answer is, I love to laugh. And wondering, is that a good thing? Or we get this sort of Benedictine spirituality which says, no, laughing's bad. John Chrysostom, even Plato, that tradition that says, if you want to leave an intellectual life, then you do it seriously. And so my years here have been sort of a struggle with, if I'm pushing myself to natural perfection, do I lose laughter and humor on the way? So my topic was an exploration of why anyone would do that. And the answer is, don't do that.
Well, tell us about the nature of laughter and the nature of humor.
The specific argument from the philosophers and these theologians I mentioned are, it's contrary to man's higher ends. So I explored, well, how does humor and laughter participate in man's higher ends? And that is in his intellectual life. Laughter comes from his property as an intellectual of a rational creature. He laughs at things he sees around him. He perceives things and understands them. Laughter also has this moral aspect that Thomas Aquinas and before that Aristotle builds on, which is its capability of relaxing us and tempering us in our pursuit of wisdom and virtue. Aristotle calls this the virtue of eutropelia. A great example of this is when you bend a bow back to shoot an arrow. If you bend it back too far, the bow breaks. In just the same way, if man pursues his end to know and to lead the good life too much without qualification, then he'll break. And the laughter and humor is a qualifier for how he lives his life in a properly proportionate manner.
So are laughter and humor cues, or clues rather, to our human nature and what we're like as beings? What do they tell us?
Yeah. Laughter seems to be a sign that we look forward to something more perfect than we are. Or we laugh at Three Stooges jokes, all these kind of dumb things, and our experience for the most part is that we laugh at the stupid things that we see. Technically, this is called absurdity or incongruity. But this sort of bottom line instinct to laugh at the dumb things in life point to the fact that we are looking forward to a resurrection or a perfection of these things. Nothing is laughable. Nothing can be taken light of if there is not a perfection of those things. If we end that imperfection, then life is just tragedy. So even without the incarnation, man has this built-in property that says hope for something better.
Okay. Now, what makes things funny? Is everything fair game for funny? Puns, pratfalls, wit, Three Stooges jokes, third grade jokes, subtle intellectual humor. I mean, what are the limits? What makes things funny, and what are the limits to that?
Yeah, so this huge limit of humor seems that everything is fair game. When we talk about virtue, the virtue of humor, we say, oh, there's the mean between laughing too much and laughing too little, the buffoon, and the bore from Aristotle's Ethics. But in reality, we laugh at things from as small as stubbing your toe to the great mysteries and sacraments of life. What makes something funny? That's an interesting question, because it's sort of a choice to find something funny. Laughter is both spontaneous and a choice. We laugh at incongruities, things that aren't natural, but we can also choose not to laugh at them. A great example is spilling coffee on yourself. You have the choice to be angry about that, or you have the choice to think it's funny.
If I spill coffee on myself, that's not funny. If you spill coffee on yourself, I think that's pretty amusing.
Right, right. Yes, that's the juxtaposition of being removed from the pain that we see as funny. But the virtue comes in when we can apply that to ourselves, because really when you laugh at anything, you're laughing at yourself. Because man is intricately connected to the imperfection of all of reality, because he's all of material reality, rather, because he's material himself. The wonderful thing about laughter is that when we are able to practice it on ourselves, in quotation marks, then we are participating in the comedic outlook on life that brings hope and life, rather than seeing everything as a tragedy.
Well, I think you're going to answer this question. I think I know how you're going to answer it. Is solemnity the mark of the saint and the philosopher, or is laughter essential to holiness and to wisdom?
Well, we have St. Benedict. I already brought him up. He says, don't laugh. Be solemn. Be obedient. Work hard. Or at labora. So I think, actually, when we think of the saint, we think of someone who's somber. But I think saints aren't sad in reality. There's a joyfulness in them. And this can be translated into humor and into laughter. You reach a point in your natural perfection when you skip everything else and you become supernatural, with, of course, the grace that God gives you. I think the Benedictine monks, well, St. Benedict, perfect monk, supersedes what's naturally perfect in order to get beyond that to the supernatural. But the perfect person, maybe the saint, does have laughter and does have humor. Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas defend this position by saying that anything against reason is a sin. So St. Thomas Aquinas derives very forcefully the idea that not being able to be mirthful, to have playful conversation, is an instability or a lack of virtue in any person.
Oh, so lack of mirth is contrary to reason?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because things in the world are absurd and things in the world are weirdly juxtaposed to one another, and to laugh at them is the reasonable thing to do.
Right.
You referred in your oration to the supernatural implication of humor. What is that, and how does that apply?
Yes, natural laughter is a property of man. It's built into him. It's a part of him. But when you get to supernatural implications, I was talking about how the fact that we have this natural property leads to the understanding of something that is sacred and beyond the material world we see around us. This comedic hope I've been talking about is the desire to be perfected in some way. Louise Cowan calls this the gratuitous gift as the center of comedy. By comedy, I don't mean humorous. I mean this sort of transcendent, this sort of perfecting. So on the natural level, laughter has to do with this natural hope. But then you have this sort of supernatural implication when you take that hope and draw it all the way to its end. Man laughs at material, at himself, and thus is hoping to be perfected. But what is that ultimate perfection? It is the reconciliation of the imperfection of matter and the perfection of spirit. G.K. Chesterton says that man finds things funny because he himself is funny, because of the incongruity between his spiritual immensity within and his smallness in the outside, his smallness and meanness in the material. And that it is funny because of the juxtaposition between a house being larger inside than outside. And this desire, or this understanding rather, of the incongruity of our smallness outside and our largeness inside, brings with it the hope that we will eventually be resurrected. This is the resurrection that Christ has promised us, has given us, resurrection of the body and of all material universe. Because our hope, our natural hope, brings with it the understanding that eventually our gratuitous gift comes from a conscious, intelligent love, which is the love of God. And so the fact that we're given this natural laughter points to the fact that there will be coming some sort of reconciliation between all the foolishness and absurdity that we laugh at now.
Making life comedy in the sense of all sorts of bad things may happen, but it all comes out right in the end.
Yes.
And that's our hope. Which brings up the question, are we going to be laughing in heaven?
Yes, good point. There won't be any more incongruities besides the fact that we're saved in heaven. I think of all of eternity, we'll have the realization that there's no way on earth or in heaven that we merited this salvation, this perfect happiness that we're given. So the root of our laughter in heaven will probably be the surprise that is both the basis of joy and of humor. This sort of surprise that we should have this joy coming to us. So if we're laughing in heaven, it will be an eternal realization of how marvelous and surprising our salvation is.
And the joke will, be, in fact, be on us.
Yes, the joke will always be on us.
G.K. Chesterton once quipped, "Angels can fly because they take themselves lightly." St. Philip Neri, I am quite sure, would agree enthusiastically, and I know Kevin and I would both agree. Even during Lent, maybe especially during Lent, we should be marked by cheerfulness and good humor that are the result of an indomitable hope and of taking ourselves lightly enough to fly. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Topwich.